1-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Strikeout for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
All right, here we go. Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Welcome back. It's great to be back here on a Friday. What should be a fun weekend of Mariners baseball. We'll talk about that in just a second. So a few things on this podcast I think you'll enjoy. One, nice conversation between Rick Riz and Charlie Furbush. I always love hearing kind of the inside stories about how guys got to the big leagues or how they developed, in Charlie's case, his best pitch. It's a great story about how he did it. Yeah, if you haven't heard it, you'll love him telling the story. But it's a really good conversation about pitching. That's coming up in a couple minutes. Rick Riz, Charlie Furbush. We're going to visit with Kevin Martinez coming up. We're going to talk about this homestand, particularly this weekend. It's a big weekend at Safeco Field. So we'll talk about that. And also, while we were in Boston over the weekend, I was determined to play this piece of audio because I don't think I have this year. I think I played it once last year, and I don't think I've played it this year yet. And of all the audio I have, of all the Mariners audio I have, which is a lot, this may be my favorite. And I was determined while we were in Boston, I was looking at the red seat in right field, 502 feet away from home plate, where Ted Williams parked one at Fenway Park. They painted the seat red. You can sit in the seat and sit where he bashed a baseball. I, at that moment, thought, you know, I got to play again the Dave Niehaus interview with Ted Williams, which I think is spectacular. I thoroughly enjoy it, and I hope you do too. Some of you, many of you, have probably heard it before, those of you that have been with the podcast since the beginning, but I'm sure many of you haven't heard this yet. So it's fantastic. Dave Niehaus sitting down and chatting with Ted Williams about baseball. It's fantastic. You'll enjoy it. So that comes up in a few minutes as well. First, let's talk about this weekend. We'll talk about it more with Kevin Martinez as well, but I am pumped about tonight. Tonight's fantastic. You know me. I love a great pitching matchup, and we have a great pitching matchup in store at Safeco Field tonight. Of course, it's fireworks night at Safeco Field. That doesn't hurt. But the King, Felix Hernandez, will take to the mound, looking to bounce back off a very tough series against a very tough game against the Boston Red Sox. And what was a tough series, dropping 2 of 3. But Felix taking the mound against Chris Sale, the fireballer. Felix against Sale. This is going to be spectacular. Great matchup. Sale is one of the best pitchers in baseball. His fireball stuff is tremendous. He brings serious gas. Already over 200 punchouts on the season. 208 strikeouts to 32 walks on the year. In 157 innings. It's incredible. Opponents just batting .224 against him. He's really been unbelievable this year. His last time out against the Cubs, just 7 innings of one-hit ball, 15 strikeouts in the ball game, just walking 2. Unreal. It's weird. He went through his last start in July, his first start in August. He gave up 7 earned against Boston and then 7 earned against Tampa Bay. His ERA went from 2.85 to 3.52. He's chopped into that a little bit with his last 2 starts. But he was on his game against the Cubs. 15 strikeouts. Mariners will have their hands full, but they do have the King on the mound. And again, looking to bounce back. I'm really looking forward to the game tonight at Safeco Field. 7:10 first pitch. Saturday, Robinson Cano bobblehead night on Saturday. Again, we'll talk about that with Kevin Martinez a little bit more in a couple of minutes, but Saturday should be a fun day at Safeco Field as well. More night baseball from the safe. And then Sunday, of course, day baseball at Safeco Field. So three against the White Sox, and then the A's come in for three. We'll talk about the A's more on the podcast next week. But let's get right to it. Conversation between Rick Riz and Charlie Frobush. A little Rick's Tips action here on the podcast.
Heyo! This is Charlie Frobush back again with another edition of Rick's Tips. I would love to pass this microphone over so he can do this show instead of me. Here it is, Rick Riz, your host.
All right, let's go back to your days growing up in South Portland, Maine. When did you first become a pitcher?
Man, I think I've been pitching my whole life. When I was 9 years old, I was definitely pitching and playing first base and every other position on the team, it seemed like. It was something I always did, as well as play other positions. But once I kind of got older and got to high school, and it was just mainly pitching, and yeah, it worked out.
Very well. We're lucky to have you. Nothing but fastballs until when? When did you start throwing the old curveball?
I want to say I was throwing a curveball in Little League, unfortunately. My brother threw one. He was 3 years older, and it was just something that there wasn't really much, you know, I think people were a little hesitant, you know, to throw a curveball. And I think it was something that I kind of picked up a little bit, and it was able to get some movement. So luckily, it worked out for me, but I wouldn't recommend throwing anything, I'd say, until you get to the big field and build up some strength as a young adolescent.
Great advice for the kids. Now, when you were signed by the Detroit Tigers, you came up, you did some starting. When you came over here, you did some starting, then went to the bullpen. What's that transition been like going from being a starter to a reliever?
Yeah, I know. Some people don't even remember that I used to be a starter. used to do that. I mean, I was a starter my whole life, so it definitely took a little bit of an adjustment period to get down to the bullpen and be at the bullpen at this level, understanding what it's like to be in situations and, you know, your name be called upon, whatever it is, and you got to be mentally and physically ready every day. It took a little bit of getting used to, and I saw other guys, how they went about their business, and you kind of, you know, coming to your own in terms of, you know, learning what you need to do every day to be physically ready, as well as being able to keep your mind in a good place. Regardless of the situation that's thrown at you, you can still stay simple-minded and go and attack and execute pitches.
Visiting with Charlie Frobush here on Rick's Tips. And, Charlie, you do have a wicked slider. That's been a great pitch for you a long time. When did you come up with the slider, and how would you tell kids to throw that?
Well, the slider was kind of a lucky evolution of what I was trying to throw, a cutter. I kind of was a fastball, curveball guy. My changeup was just, it wasn't very good. I felt like I couldn't get a consistent feel with it. Actually saw Cliff Lee, who used to play here, throw a cutter. And I saw him throw a cutter, curveball, fastball, and he threw a complete game in the playoffs, struck out 10 or 11 guys. Said, I'm doing that. I'm going to try and throw a cutter. And my cutter really didn't do too much, and it took some work, and finally I decided to put a little bit more snap into it and kind of throw it more like a curveball, but not completely like a curveball. And it's really just been a great, great pitch for me to throw in a lot of situations, and, you know, it's amazing.
Best advice for any pitcher, be it a starter or a reliever, control of the fastball, when did that come for you?
I would say that really came for me my freshman year in college. Well, senior year in high school, freshman year in college, being able to throw fastballs, you know, wherever I wanted on both sides of the plate, and specifically inside to a righty. Yeah. That was the one pitch that I felt I was able to execute very, very consistently and made it very effective. You know, you're going to be facing way more right-handers than left-handers, so, you know, be able to attack them and pitch in a little bit, but it really opens up the strike zone on the other side and being able to move the ball up, down, in, and out.
Charlie, so many kids right now are pitching a lot of competitive games, a lot of competitive innings, instead of just like when we used to be kids, you know, just throwing, doing a lot of throwing. What advice would you give a young guy who's just starting to learn how to pitch?
I think there's a lot of things that go into it. I think as a pitcher, we've always been told to be consistent. I think that's something that people should take pride in, whether it's playing catch, throwing on a mound, you know, doing whatever, trying to have consistent mechanics in terms of, you know, the where your arm is. And it takes some time. It takes some muscle memory to take into effect. But try to be as consistent as you can. And even when, you know, things aren't going as good, you got to kind of stay the course and understand that it might take some failures to to make who you are and make the successes that much more sweeter.
And also have some fun when you're out there.
Oh, always have fun. You know, if you're not having fun, you probably shouldn't be on the field. That's like the most important thing I'd say is, you know, you got to have fun and you got to thrive on some competition. So it's something that is very important to me, everyone else on this team, and obviously even as a young kid, it's a big thing to lean on.
You're outstanding coming out of the bullpen. You have a lot of fun, and hope to see you back real soon. Charlie, thanks a lot for being our guest here on Rick's Tips, and thanks a lot for the open.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rick.
And here it is, just one of my favorite pieces, probably my favorite piece of audio that I have. Dave Niehaus with the great Ted Williams.
Ted, first of all, tonight the Mariners open a series against the Baltimore Orioles, and Cal Ripken is 95 games away from one of the greatest records that they said would never be broken. Yep. What is your perspective on Ripken's streak?
Well, it's absolutely marvelous and sensational and tremendous. To play that many games without missing one, I can't hardly conceive of it, because I know that you can get a blister on the wrong part of your hand and you can't play, or you get a little broken little part of your finger and you can't hold a bat, and just so many things. You get hit in the elbow and you can't play, and he's a big strong guy and is always in there, and hell, is a great credit to this game.
Your rookie year, 1939, was the year that Gehrig's streak of 21-30 ended. What do you remember about the Iron Horse?
Well, in spring training that year, I had in the clubhouse, we had a little clubhouse in Sarasota, and I could hear, and I was right close to the trainer's room, and I could hear all the old writers coming in, you know, and say, Gehrig doesn't look good at all. You know, he can't hit the ball, and he can't do this. And I said, well, what the hell, he's 38 years old, you know. He's probably over the hill. And of course, in those days, I think ball players did quit a little bit earlier. They got the incentive to play longer now if they're making $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 or $1 million. You know, that incentive to play is even more more prevalent. And so, but anyway, I saw Gehrig, and I walked up the stairs up to the clubhouse, followed him, because all the players went up to the Yankee side, then they went over to their side of the dugout. And I remember following him. I never actually met Gehrig, but I was I watched him and looked at him and everything, you know. And, well, if you compare his records with anybody, well, he's right there, and there's no way you can't say. Boy, what a player.
Yeah. Another thing before I get into your career that I was just awestruck. I don't know if you remember last year we had a problem up here with the Kingdome when the tiles fell.
And oh, yes.
And we had to reassume the season at Fenway Park in Boston. And I swear to God, when I die, I want my ashes put under the plate there. But anyway, that's another story. That particular series was picked up in Boston. Everybody was allowed to come in for $10. They had to open the ballpark there on Yawkey Way a couple of hours before, and it was like lemmings swimming to the sea when the kids tried to get those great seats. But at any rate, I remember on a Sunday afternoon after that final game, and I've always been in awe of that red seat out there 502 feet away from home plate. People in line, and they couldn't get them out of the ballpark. It almost brought tears to my eyes as they waited just to sit in that red seat. And I think I was talking to either Joe Gelati or or Peter Gammons or somebody like that. And he said, you know, when Ted hit that home run off Freddie Hutchinson, there was no seat there. There were bleachers. Is that true?
No. I think it is true. But they had the seats numbered, because the only way I could tell anybody or they could authenticate the actuality of it all was that this guy was sitting up there with a straw hat. And the ball, he reached up the ball and the ball hit him in the hat and put a hole in, you know, kind of crushed it. And the next day, his picture was in the paper, and they give the seat number and everything else, you know. So Sullivan was there, and I told him about that ball, and I said, all you got to do is check the papers. They'll tell you exactly where the ball was. So what we did this one day, I was just sitting there looking at the park. So he pursued it, and he got exactly the spot. And then they painted the seat red. And that's certainly one of the best balls I hit. But everything was with me, and I got it in the air, and I hit it real good, and the wind was blowing out, and he just kept going. And Freddie Hutchinson was so mad. Ooh.
I'll bet he was mad.
Yeah,
I mean, it's unbelievable that a man can hit the ball that far.
Yeah, I know. He's a great guy.
Yeah, he really was.
Yeah.
Okay, why did you pick Junior for your first award, your Hitter of the Year award?
Well, we just had to. Here's a young kid that's... I saw him in the All-Star game, the first All-Star game I ever saw him play in. And the first time up, he hit a line drive, low line drive, into left center. Center, left center. And boy, was I impressed the way he hit that ball. And, of course, he just started going from there. He just started to blossom all the way. And I'm really, really happy for him because his dad was one of the best-liked players. And I didn't even know him, but I knew he was well-liked. And when he said anything, he had a great smile. And then this kid coming along, I can't think of anything that is greater than to see your own kid excel in a sport that you played in. And he certainly is excelling. And I hear more people talk about his hitting, although the other kid is hitting like hell, too, Bobby Bond. But they say more about Ken Griffey. Bond has got tremendous talent, but Ken Griffey, geez, tough.
I got on tape, and one of my favorite interviews was the one you did last year with Costas. I thought it was a classic.
With who? Oh, Costas?
Yeah. And your reaction to what everybody has asked you, you've often been quoted as wanting to be known as the best damn hitter who ever lived. And I thought your answer was really great. If you can... As you went through all your records, you said, I don't know, but I know I was one of them, right?
Yeah. I always said, most of the time, I've always said that, and I've kept real track of all the hitters because that was my greatest interest in the game. And I've seen them, and I've looked at them, I've studied them, and I've talked to them, and I've asked them. And I want to tell you that my final answer would have to be, I can't say in my own mind, honestly, that I think I was the best hitter. But I said, if they'll put me in a group of Ruth and Gehrig and Simmons and Fox and DiMaggio and Greenberg and Heilman and Cobb, I said, that'll be good enough for me. And I think that that's the way I really feel. All those guys, you know, were the best, that's all.
And you were probably the best of the best.
Well, I don't know about that at all, but I do know that I had a great time writing this book with Jim Prime, the 20 Greatest Hitters. And I'll tell you, that's a tough assignment. I thought, hell, we'll name them off. You can name the first 10 or 12 pretty good, but now you got a group of about 20 in there that's tough.
Mm-hmm.
And you really got to separate them analytically as just with every aspect. And the big thing about it is they got a formula now that includes percentage of times on base, and that is a very, very, very big factor. And, of course, the slugging percentage is a very, very, very big factor.
One of the great pieces of sports journalism, I think, is John Updike's story about your
there's no question about it.
Last at bat about God don't answer curtain calls. I was just wondering, when you rounded the bases, your last at-bat, you had hit that home run, you went back to the clubhouse. What did you do then? What was going through your mind then?
Well, I was, the guys were all telling me to take a bow or do something, and I just couldn't do that. I pretty near thought about tipping my hat, but I didn't. I was emotionally, uplifted a little bit, but I would never come close to doing it, but I thought about it. But when I went back to clubhouse, I mean, I went out to go out the next inning, and then he sent somebody out behind me, and I came in. But, I'm pretty lucky to do that.
Memorial Day is Monday. You served in both World War II and Korea. You lost a lot of your baseball career, by the way, but maybe even a shot at the then-record 714 home runs. But what does Memorial Day mean to you about serving your country?
Well... I'm patriotic, but I'm not. I'm not Mickey Mouse about it, where I'm gushy, but I look back now and I say, well, I'm glad I had a chance to do that, It's an experience that you'd never want to think that you could have it happen, and then after it's all over and you didn't really appreciate until it was all over that you were a lucky guy to get through all the everything that happens to a young player, everything that happens to anybody going to the service, anything that happens through life, especially during a war, too. I'll tell you, you got to be lucky.
Mm-hmm. When you entered the Hall of Fame, the things you said, one of the things you said was it was time that some of the great players from the Negro League should be in Cooperstown
as
well?
That was ingrained in my mind way back in 1930, 31, 32, 34. I played in high school. His name was Leo Thompson, and he lived in the littlest and simplest of a little house that I ever saw in San Diego in that area that I lived at. And he was a tremendous little athlete. He wasn't a very big guy, but he was a good athlete. Hell of a little ball player, good little football player, good little boxer. And I've asked 100 times when I've been back to San Diego about, does anybody ever know what happened to Leo Thompson? And I don't know whatever happened to him, but I've asked. And it'd be fun to kind of find out, but he must be an old guy now like I am. And so you never know. Maybe he was in a war. Maybe he had a problem or something. But so I've always felt in my heart maybe a little more thoughtfulness and regarding people that didn't have quite the chance that other people had.
Mm-hmm.
And still, maybe that's one of the reasons I get even a little more bitter when I see riots.
Right.
And that type of thing. And I get mad to think that, that things like that happen. But that was a thing that I had ingrained in me a long, long time.
Ted, you won a couple of Triple Crowns in 42-47, yet neither time did you win the MVP award, last man to hit 400. What happened?
Well, you know, I don't know what happened. One time, what was it, 42?
Yeah.
Well, Gordon had the best year he ever had in his life. Yankees won the pennant, and they used to put even more strength on that when they voted for the most valuable player. And that's possible, certainly, to win the most valuable player without winning the pennant. I mean, it's possible to be most valuable player without winning the pennant.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that Gordon, being he was a hell of a player, should be in the Hall of Fame. Jeez.
Right.
And of course, when I didn't get it, when I hit 400, DiMaggio had one of the super great years in the history of the game. And he was truly a great, great, great ball player.
Yeah.
And then the other time, I don't know the other time. Which one's the other time you're talking about?
42-47.
Huh?
1947.
47.
Yeah. Did you win the Triple Crown in 47?
42 and 47?
Yeah.
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 Okay. But I don't even know who got it in 47. Who got it?
Joe DiMaggio.
DiMaggio.
Yeah.
Well, I never felt badly about the year he won the streak and the year that he won the most valuable player. I wouldn't argue against either one of those.
Okay. Now, I want to get your comments, and you read the papers every day. You know what has happened to this game. You know what happened August the 12th last year. You know the resentment that the fans have had. You know that attendance is down 25%, TV ratings are down, and they say it's a dying sport. How about your perspective on the game today and what can be done to rejuvenate it?
Well, I don't think it's a dying sport at all, and I tell you, I can feel, because I had the same feeling. I said, what the hell is going on? What do they want? What does management want? What do the players want? They have representation, and I still feel badly they couldn't get together on it a little better, because the end result was that a lot of fans got turned off a little bit. But this game is so great. This game is so great that it'll get going just the way it was, I'll bet you. And it'll take a little bit of time because the present player excites the fan to the point where he wants to go to the game. The name that's being created that's a great player or an outstanding player or a stimulation to a city and a locality starts getting the fans worked up. And I think that guys like Bonds and guys like Griffey and guys like that big hitting third baseman out there.
Matt Williams?
Huh?
Matt Williams with the Giants?
Oh, yes, sir. Boy, does he rack them. And then you got other guys. Gee, there's a lot of... I see more talent, honestly. I see more talent, I think, than I've ever seen in this game before. I mean, I see catches. Cripe, I never saw catches like that. Even, you know, they go straight out in 10, 12 feet and catch one right off the grass.
Yeah, that's
I
true.
I see things like... I see speed. I see bodies that are super and talent that's super. And it just shows you that this is a pretty hard game to play the way you'd really like to play it.
Who was the first manager that used the Williams shift on you, and how did you react to it? How did you attack it?
Well, I was hitting just like gangbusters. Boy, I was hitting the ball all over the place. And it was against Cleveland, and I had just won the first game in the 11th inning with a home run. And I was hitting like gangbusters all year, and then when I came out in the second game, they had all kinds of graphs and all kinds of charts to where I hit the ball and where I didn't hit the ball and who I hit it against. And he came out that second game with Boudreaux, a great player and a great manager in my book, because he handled the staff all year, and he won the Most Valuable Player Award. I think that's probably one of the most complete years anybody in baseball ever had, because he not only managed, he hit great and he fielded great, and he just carried the whole thing. And I don't think there's ever a player that had a more complete year than he did.
How many times in your career were you asked to bunt, or did you ever?
Oh, I never get the bunt sign. Never. Never.
You never sacrificed?
No, I never got no bunt signs. No, I never got a bunt sign. Never did.
Oh, mercy.
I never got a steal sign. The only time I ever tried to steal, and surprisingly, I think I stole about 35 bases, I never stole. I never got a steal sign. But if I got hit with a ball or something, I'd be mad, you know. Then I'd try to do it. And that's what I must have done most of them, because I never stole any other time.
Would you have done anything differently?
I don't know what I could have done differently. They asked me that the last day I played. And the only thing I said, and I know I was right when I said it, I'd have tried to get stronger. Now, I broke my shoulder, and I'm taking a lot of rehabilitation to try to get it going again. And I know that that exercise is all important, and you can develop stronger shoulders and develop stronger arms, and you can even up your speed with the right kind of training. And I never realized that so much, because until I've had to go through things. And I did say the last day, I said, if I did anything different, I'd try to get stronger, and I know that's right.
Finally,
I would say now, I would add one other thing. I'd say quickness is stronger. Because you're, till the last time you go to bat, you say, I got to be quick, I got to hang in here, you know?
Is it true that your eyesight was so good you could literally see the seams on the baseball?
Yeah, oh, geez, I'd want to vomit when I hear that.
Is that right?
Probably some sports writer thought that.
Yeah. Oh, mercy.
You can't see no seams on the ball. It looks a little reddish, but it's spinning and it's coming in there fast. Hell no, I must have been a frustrated sports writer that couldn't hit.
And also, you know, you've heard this story, too. You've heard this comment, too, and I've even used it on the air in talking about you, about when you were managing both Washington and Texas, that you hated your own pitchers as much as any other pitcher. Is that true?
No. In fact, some of the best friends I've ever had were pitching on that team. Boy, I'd like to see how good we could do today with that team we had. Because it was a lot better team than anybody thought it was.
Uh-huh.
And we started to roll a little bit, and hell, we were playing the last week of the season, trying to beat the Red Sox out of position in the Bennett race.
Yeah.
Not for first place, but for 1, 2, 3, 3, 4, 5.
My partner on television is Ron Fairley. What kind of a hitter was Ron?
Ron was a great looking hitter. He reminded me, he wasn't that big, I didn't think. What is he, 5'10 and 175?
Yeah. Not now, right. But he used to be 175, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But he was a good looking hitter, and I used to look at him, and even though I didn't play very much against him, I looked at him and all I could think about was O'Doul, Lefty O'Doul. He was a stylish looking hitter and a damn good one.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll tell you, and finally this, just for my own personal edification, I've got a lot of your memorabilia because you, if my daughter had been a son, she would have been a Ted Williams knee house, by the way. but I have in my game room, in my den, and I'm sure there are thousands of them across America, that picture of you wrapped in the towel at Fenway Park with a bat in your hand. What year was that?
I would think that it would be in 39 or 40,
uh-huh.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm wrapped in the towel, and Christ, I got a bat holding in the locker room.
That's right.
Yeah, and then they got another one of me holding a bat and at the foot of a bed, and now I'm going to hit the leg on the bed, you know. Jesus Christ.
Well,
I didn't have a bat in my hand an awful lot.
One of these days I'm going to get that to you and have you order.
But I'll have a chance to sit down with you.
Hey, Ted, you don't know what a thrill this is, my friend.
Oh, thank you very much. You're a good guy.
And finally, to get you ready for the homestand this weekend, Kevin Martinez.
Baby, you're a fan.
Yes, this is a fitting song. This is fitting. Welcome back to Fenway Park as we're joined now by Kevin Martinez, Vice President of Marketing with the Seattle Mariners. And Kevin, that song is chosen for a reason.
Yes,
there's,
it sure
there's,
is.
There's a big night. There's a big night coming up when we return home with the Chicago White Sox coming in next Friday.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We've got a big weekend series, actually, and it does start off with the Friday night fireworks show, thanks to Seattle City Light. And it's this show, you know, each show is themed, Gare, and this show is set to all of this summer's most popular songs. So it's probably the highest energy. You're going to probably see the highest volume of pyrotechnic effects in this show. We're trying a few new wrinkles. So, the fireworks shows have been so well received from our fans. We've done more this year than ever before, and we're always looking at ways to make it a little bit different.
Now, the shows have been spectacular. I remember in the postgame show, the sing-along actually brought the crowd up because they were belting out the songs. That was a lot of fun that night.
Yeah, you know, when we got Mariner Vision and we started the fireworks show, we said, okay, how do we integrate the Mariners Vision screen into these shows? Because we've got one of the best boards in baseball, and how do we make it part of the show? And we were brainstorming one afternoon and said, why don't we turn it into a big karaoke machine? And we got to get Furbush and Williamson after listening to that.
Yes.
Now I can't get Bohemian Rhapsody out of my head. And all Brennan's got me thinking about meatballs nonstop here from his Road Meats report. So I know what I'm having for dinner tonight. But, yeah, the sing-along is a fun concept. And we actually had Bohemian Rhapsody in the last show.
That was a good time. That was a good time. Yeah, we aim to please here on the magazine. Glad you're enjoying it. Well, then, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say the series with the White Sox has a couple other big events. Saturday is Saturday the 22nd. Thanks to Root Sports, is Robbie Cano bobblehead night. It's the final bobblehead giveaway of the season. And those are always popular with our fans. And then we round out the weekend. You know, the kiddos are getting ready to go back to school, and we're going to send them back to school in style, thanks to Boeing, with a Mariners backpack, a really cool looking backpack for the kids. And we'll end that weekend with a run around the base, thanks to Key Bank, on Sunday afternoon. So a little something for everyone next week, and some fireworks, a great bobblehead giveaway, and then the kids' day on Sunday.
I love it. No, I'm looking at the picture right now. The backpack looks fantastic. The Mariners logo right there in the back. And then Cano, he's got the follow-through with the swing on the bobblehead. That's a good-looking bobblehead. I like it.
Yeah, no, Camden Finney, who oversees all our bobblehead giveaways, does a great job, and it's a real unique pose. And one last thing, Gary, that we're getting questions about and we're trying to work through. People have been asking, are we doing something to celebrate Hisashi Wakuma's no-hitter? Mm-hmm. And we are working on a special night for that. We're just waiting to find out when he's going to start before we announce anything. So we're working through those details. The rotation hasn't been set. As you know, there's an off day coming up. So we're waiting to kind of get a read on that. And we do hope to do something commemorative around his no-hitter next homestand as well.
Outstanding. That was so much fun at Safeco Field, setting history. Fifth no-hitter in Mariners history. That'll be a fun celebration.
Yeah, no question. And it's funny, if you look at these Mariner matinees, these midweek day games, something
yeah, something about
happens.
That, right?
I mean, you know, from Felix's perfect game to Sashi's no-hitter to Kyle Seager's walk-off last year, it's there's something magical about these midweek matinees. Pretty cool.
Yeah, lesson learned, never miss a day game at Safeco Field, right?
Indeed. I'm going to make a T-shirt out of that.
Yes. Well, Kevin, thanks a lot for the visit. We really appreciate it and really looking forward to coming home with the White Sox for three and then the Oakland A's following for three games.
See you later!